I'm used to a bell system, so normally I just teach from when the bell goes to the next bell, so there's no bell system, so this is your bell. We're going to go ahead and get started here. I think all good teachers start with an assignment, so I'm going to give you an assignment for today. You shouldn't be too worried about that for the kids, and the first thing, and it wasn't even my class with them yet, it was just a get to know you thing. I gave them an assignment and then gave them a quiz. So, yeah, they already don't like me. So it's gonna be a long week. So here's your assignment for today. Today is my wife's birthday, and she wants to be here in the worst way. I won't go into it, but me being here and her not is difficult to say the least for her. So what I would like you to do today is using some form of technology. It could be your cell phone, text messaging, Facebook. You can Facebook message her, or you could even use an envelope and a stamp. I don't know where you find those, but somewhere you can probably find those somewhere around. And I would like you to offer her a word of encouragement. Or a birthday message. That would be a really nice thing for you to do. If you'd like to, if you're not friends with her on Facebook, her name is Ginger Herman, and you will never regret requesting her friendship. I did about 20 some years ago, and never regretted it. I'll give you her cell phone number right after. How's that? Her cell phone number is 2. That's all I know. Don't even ask me what mine is. I have no idea. So, but I'll give that to you. And if you want her our address, I can give that to you later too. I won't put it on the tape. And Mike, if you can get the sermon on the website as quickly as possible, that would do me a lot of good there. By the way, there will be no retake on this assignment. She's turning 39, and therefore will be having her last birthday. So you won't be able to do this next year, so it won't be on there anymore. So actually, don't worry about getting this on soon. Now that I mentioned the age. Okay, I decided not to go ahead and read my descriptive paragraph to you. I just figured maybe it's better that you just don't know what I'm not going to cover. So, and we're just going to try to get right into this. If the Lord wills, and I adhere to my new piece of technology called a watch that I bought 2 days ago, hopefully we'll get through what I'd like to cover. I'd like to cover about five topics, and Doug was laughing at me when I told the kids I was going to cover five topics, because who knows if we're going to do it or not. The first topic that I'd like to look at is, and I don't know if this will make some of you happy and some of you it won't make happy, so I don't think there's any way I can probably win in this whole situation. We're not probably going to get to some real modern-day technologies, you know, maybe not even to Wednesday, hopefully by Tuesday, but we might not even get them to Wednesday. I feel I need to set up a foundation. And so our first major topic is, what measuring device are we going to use to evaluate the technologies that we're going to talk about? If we just go right in and talking about technologies and we don't think about what measuring device are we going to use to evaluate the goodness or the badness of these technologies, then I think we've made a big mistake. So, and I think that's a really important foundation, and it's a scriptural foundation, and I feel that anything that's ever delivered from the pulpit, that if there's not scripture and grounded in scripture, then it's worthless. And so it's a tough thing. You know, I don't want to just talk about Facebook for 5 days. Some of you might find that interesting, but I might not. And I feel that it's a struggle. I want to make sure that we have a scriptural foundation, that we put we go to the Word of God a lot in all these issues, not just technology, but in all issues that we have. So that's the first major topic. The second one, we'll get into the technologies. We'll get into communication technologies. We'll talk about cell phones and email and Facebook and Twitter and things like that. Then we're going to go into what I'm calling broken cistern technologies, and a lot of you probably know what I mean by that. Just basically technology that really is pretty much evil, that there's really no redeeming qualities in those, and we need to try to figure out how we're going to avoid those. I don't want to just talk about them. I want to talk about that we have problems with them. And really be honest and talk about how do we avoid those things, because they're hard to avoid, I find, in my life. How do we avoid them? We really need to be honest and really do some talking about how we can try to not look at that and to move those out. Those are broken cistern technologies. Then we're going to talk about educational or Bible study help technologies. And that's where I could use your help. I have 4 children, so I have no money. And therefore, all the technologies I'm going to talk about are things I found for free. So and there's just too much stuff out there. I can't review it all. So if you have something that you use that maybe you purchased or you got for free that helps you study the Bible, different online helps or whatever, if you wouldn't mind writing up a little thing about that, how much it costs, what's good about it that you think, if you want to throw that in the box in the back, that would be great. I might compile maybe a list and I can go check some of these things out myself, and maybe by the end of the week we can kind of pool our resources, because there's just too many things out there. And the last thing, if we get to it, I hope we do, I'm not guaranteeing it, but will be biological technologies. You know, what are we doing in medicine to prolong our life here on this decaying earth? Or reproductive technologies, when does life start, abortion and birth control and some things like that. We're not going to go crazy on it, but I think it's probably we're talking about technologies, and there's a lot of technology that we need to be involved there. Okay, so we'll get started here, and I guess I'll just start with a question. How many of you, I wasn't here last week, so I don't really know, how many of you are using some technological devices in your studies today? Okay, so quite a few, right? Quite a few. That's good. There's several video clips I want to show this week, and so this first one is basically just to test out my technology to see if it works. So my son bought a speaker system for his iPod the other day, and then I proceeded to take it with me, so he's going to be upset about that when he finds that out. We don't have a sound system, so we're going to use this, and hopefully that'll work. I'm just going to test this out here. It doesn't really matter if you can hear it or not, because it's not actually in English. You have to read the subtitles. So, reading, that's a good technology. So let's just look at this as we start here.
Blar frem og tilbake, og når den er greit, ja.
Anybody relate? So we'll ask the question again. How many of you are using some technologies today? We had a little more hands, right? So how many of you are using like an iPad, a computer, iPhone, something like that? Boy, we're moving on, aren't we? How many of you are using a book? It's a really good piece of technology. Really good. How many of you are using a scroll? Okay, good. Because we'd have to make fun of those people, right? I mean, they're just not coming along with us at all. This is my challenge. You know, we're all over the place, aren't we? I mean, some people are going to be doing all kinds of things with technology, and I'm teaching technology, but you know, I mean, I like the book. I really like the book. I've tried to use an iPad, and I just, you know, I'm comfortable with my book. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's good. But when we're talking about technology, we need to have to understand a lot of us are in different places when we're discussing these things, and we need to be careful with how we talk about it. The invention of the printing press. I was going to talk to Rick, and you discussed this, I would imagine. Probably one of the greatest inventions ever, right? I mean, the Reformation really couldn't really even happen really without this amazing invention by Johann Gutenberg in 1440. 3,600 pages per day. Unreal. As opposed to just hand copying a couple pages per day. Was this technology good? Was it good or is it bad? Well, what was the first book that was printed? What did Gutenberg print? The 42 line Bible. It's called the 42 line Bible. It's 42 lines. There's a picture of it right there on the right. Very clear. Really perfect. If there was no mistakes, you know, every copy would be very legible, and it could spread. And this is a Gutenberg up here. It says, God suffers because there are such multitudes of souls to whom His sacred word cannot be given. I don't know if Rick talked about that. It's locked up, right, in Latin, and no one could have it, and there's no copies of it. Religious truth is captive in a small number of little manuscripts which guard the common treasures instead of expanding them. Let us break the seal which binds these holy things. Let us give wings to truth that it may fly with the word, no longer prepared at vast expense, but multiplied everlastingly by a machine which never wearies to every soul which enters life. It's a pretty good quote, except for the part about the machine which never wearies. Technology breaks down, right? So this is what Gutenberg's desire was. It was to spread the word. So we would look at this and think, well, this is a great piece of technology. But this technology today is printing out a book called 50 Shades of Grey, which none of us should be indulging in. So is it good or is it bad? It can produce and spread the word of God through the world. No one can deny the goodness of that. But it can also disseminate trash, sin. These technologies can do both of these things. 100 years later, there was a man by the name of Conrad Gessner. Emily, do you know him by chance? He's like the first librarian. So he did a lot of other things too, but what he's really famous for is this Bibliotheca Universalis, if I'm saying it right. What he did was he after the 100 years after the printing press, he took all of the books that had been printed on the printing press in the first century and he cataloged them. And it had the synopsis of all these different things so that everybody could kind of understand. And he did this because he said the modern world. This is in 1545. The modern world overwhelms people with data, and this overabundance is both confusing and harmful to the mind. That's funny, isn't it? Boy, what he doesn't know, right? And so he cataloged all of these works in the first 100 years of the printing press, so that people wouldn't be as confused about the overwhelming data that was flooding them. This isn't unusual. We can go a little bit further back to a man by the name of Socrates, right? Down here in southern Missouri, you call him Socrates, I think. So, just so you know. And he had a problem with writing. He said, writing creates forgetfulness in the learner's souls because they will not use their memories. He thought it was better to be in order and be able to, you know, remember the things, which it probably is, right? And to be able to recite them and to speak them back rather than to just write them down. Because if you write them down, you don't have to remember it. I don't have to remember what I'm doing today. I have it written down here. So he had a problem with writing. We can go back to another person you might recognize by the name of Solomon. He was a king. And in Ecclesiastes 12:12, he says, "And further by these, my son, be admonished, of making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh." Do you see a theme here? It's always the same, isn't it? Oh, we're just overwhelmed with data and technology, and it's just really a difficult time to live. I did this with Excelsior a year ago, so some of you have already heard this, but one of my favorite novels is A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Darwin. I like stories where... That was back from the science thing, you know, and I even said that in my mind, and Charles Dickens, not Charles Darwin. Okay, I've lost everybody already. Okay, Charles Dickens, and the Tale of Two Cities, one of my favorite stories, and I like stories where a man lays down his life for others. That's like the best story ever, isn't it? Isn't that a great story? And so in the opening paragraph of Charles Dickens' novel, he writes, and a lot of you know this one, and because he just nails this so well that I want to read it, and it's just really good. He says, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief, it was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light, it was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despair. We had everything before us, we had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven, we were all going direct the other way. In short, the period was so far like the present period that some of its noisiest authorities," these would be the news people, "insisted on its being received for good or for evil in the superlative degree of comparison only." The superlative degree of comparison only. We every generation speaks in superlatives. That's really short. That's how I would have written if I was writing the opening paragraph. Every generation speaks in superlatives. And what is superlatives? Well, I have to look this up because I'm a science teacher and this is English stuff. So there's 3 degrees of comparison. The first one is called positive. And an example of this would, you would say, "He is tall." So that's a positive degree of comparison. Then we go to the comparative degree of comparison, which makes a lot more sense. "He is taller than somebody else," right? You're comparing. He is taller. So what is the superlative? He is the tallest, right? He is the tallest of everybody. We speak that way, don't we? We speak in these superlatives, and Charles Dickens was saying that every generation does this. Every generation does this. The news authorities, the loudest authorities, the news people always speak in the superlative. Is this next election we're going to have here in November, is it an important election? Positive degree? Or is it more important than the 2008 election? Right? The comparative degree? Is that what the news people are going to say? What do the news people say? You go... I challenge you. Turn the news on, and 1 hour you'll probably hear this. It's the most important election in American history coming up real soon. Hope you vote. Right? It's the most important thing. It's going to change the world. It'll probably give you eternal life. Right? This is what we do. This is what the generations do. We speak in the superlative degree. And so what the warning here for us when we're talking about technology is, I kind of cringe when I hear people talking about, you know, with the inundation of the internet and email and cell phones, with the amount of technology we have, it is the hardest time ever to remain close to God. That's speaking in the superlatives. And I don't have any persecution right now. So it's hard for me to hear that sometimes when I hear people talk about speaking the superlatives because there's so much technology we have. We're going to talk about the good and the bad of technology, but let's not talk about it in the superlative form. Whoops. Technology, the Greek word here is technologia. It's a compound word between techne, which is the word I really want to look at, art, skill, craft, trade, occupation, and then, of course, logia, which is the study of that particular thing. And this techne, this first word here, is used three times in the Greek, in the New Testament. And it's Strong's 5078, if you wanted to look that up. Used three times. And the first time is Acts 18:3, when it's translated as occupation. What we're referring to is Paul's technology. What was Paul's technology? He was a tent maker, right? So we have, and because he was of the same craft, he abode with them and wrought, for by their occupation, by their techne, their technology, they were tent makers. Nothing said bad about that. That was good, right? That Paul earned money on the side. That was a good thing in the Scripture. So we have a mention of technology here in the New Testament with a fairly good connotation. We go to Revelation 18:22, and we have techne is translated as craft. And we're reading about what I feel is the apostate church and the fall, the kind of the downfall of the apostate church. And the voice of harpers and musicians and of pipers and trumpeters, instrumental music, if you didn't catch that, shall be heard no more at all in thee, and no craftsman of whatsoever craft he be. And what kind of craftsmen do you think these people were in the apostate church? There's a, it says, no shall be found any more in thee, and the sound of a millstone shall be heard no more at all in thee. What were they making? What did they create? What did they build? Idols. This is idolatry. So we have technology here in reference to idolatry, and it's in a bad term, and it's mentioned as being a improper use of this technology. I don't know if that's the great disservice that Alexander did to Paul. Remember Alexander, the metal worker, has done me great harm. You know, I don't know if that has to do with idolatry and what he was using his technological trade for or not, but it very well could be. The third one is Acts 17:29, and we're going to get to that sometime much later. We'll come back to that third one. So is technology good or is it evil? Is it good or is it evil? Or should we be somewhere in between? And I think we should be always kind of somewhere in between. We don't want to say that it's, you know, it's pure evil. There's the Luddites, or the Luddites. I'm not sure how you... Anybody ever heard of them? The Luddites, and I copied this right off of the internet here, were a social movement of 19th century English textile workers who protested against the changes produced by the Industrial Revolution that replaced them with less skilled, low-wage labor, and which they felt were leaving them without work and changing their way of life. The movement was named after Ned Ludd, a youth who had allegedly smashed two stocking frames 30 years earlier, and whose name had become emblematic of machine destroyers. The name evolved into the imaginary General Ludd, or King Ludd, a figure who, like Robin Hood, was reputed to live in Sherwood Forest. So during the Industrial Revolution, there were these people, the way they protested was that they went around and they destroyed all the mechanized looms. So they couldn't use the technology so they could keep their jobs, you know, and it'd take them, you know, hours and hours and hours to make some garment where the loom could do it, you know, instantly. And they thought technology was a complete evil. And so they went around destroying things, which is not something that we should be involved in, right? And so the Luddites were the kind of people that thought technology is terrible. Well, who are the people that think technology is the greatest thing ever that's been given to us? I argue Charles Darwin. We'll get to him now, I guess. The evolutionists. The evolutionists think technology is just part of our evolution. It's going to make us better and better. We've evolved so that we can think about these things, and eventually, what are we going to do? We're going to figure out how everything started. It's the Higgs boson, right? That's what we're talking about. And it started everything. Who created the Higgs boson? Well, I'll just talk about that later. We can start everything, and we can have medical things that are going to, guess what? They're going to extend your life. How long? Who knows? Maybe forever. Technology is so great, it can give you eternal life on this earth. Anybody want that? So this is what the evolutionists think. They're an extreme. They think technology is the greatest thing ever, and that it's going to solve all our problems, and it's going to do everything for us. We don't want to be in either of those camps, do we? And those are the two extremes. We don't want to be in either one of those. You know, we don't get to the 11th chapter of Genesis before we have two of the most technological marvels of the world, do we? We go to Genesis 6, and we have a technology that was actually, and I think there's very few of these, a technology that was actually handed down by God. Right? God gave the plans to Noah on how I want you to build this massive flotation device. And this technology that God gave them saved the world. It's a technology that came from God, and it saved the world. And it's amazing with Noah's Ark. But we get to the Genesis 11, and we get to Noah's great-grandson. And you know, who knows how much they learned. I mean, I would imagine they learned a lot about construction, don't you think, from a God-given plan? Well, what did they start using their construction abilities for? Building a tower, right? An amazing technological feat, a tower that would go to God, a tower that would go up into the heavens. And what did God do with this technology? He confounded it, didn't he? He confounded this technology. So we have a technology that's so good it's given by God. We have a technology that was bad enough that God felt that he needed to confound that particular technology. All judgments or evaluations, if we're talking about is technology good or evil, there has to be a measuring device or a value system by which we make our judgments. This isn't just for technology, this is for all things in life. There always has to be a value system by which we're going to measure things. I don't know what your different professions are, but I would imagine it's similar to mine. I'm a teacher. There's a set of standards. I can go on my school website, I can see the standards, and I have to meet those standards. I get checked off on those every year. I get evaluated on a set, unchanging set of standards, and I would imagine a lot of you in your profession have some kind of a standard system that you need to be evaluated on also. We always make judgments based on a certain standard that we're going to compare things. So the question is, by what standard shall we measure the various technologies we're going to talk about this week? What standard are we going to use to measure these things, which is what I really want to talk about for quite a little bit of time. The fundamental, if we're going to talk about technology, the first fundamental thing we've had that technology comes out of, it's always started with from the beginning of our time, is the system of measurement. It's how we measure things, different systems of measurement. And you probably already read it. C.S. Lewis had a pretty good quote, and technically the quote is only, I want to make sure I quote him exactly. It's only, the education is the only word supposed to be there, but I think we can easily put technology in there too. Education, technology, without values, as useful as it is, seems rather to make man a more clever devil. I thought that was a great quote. If we just go in right into technologies and we don't think about the value system that we need to have, we have technology without any kind of value system, generally, by and large, it's going to make you a more clever devil. We're going to figure out how can I use technology to do a little bit more evil things, right? Every day scheming how to do things that are evil. The scriptures talk about this. I think C.S. Lewis was right on the money with this. So measurement has always been the most basic and essential component of technological development, as well as biblically important. And so I have a lot of scriptures here, and the outlines I sent, good luck with those. I don't know even where I'm going to be in those half the time, but I think I have some of these scriptures probably mentioned in there. Measurement, it's amazing how, if you read through, especially in the Old Testament, how important measurement is to God. very important to God. Many mentions of it and how we are to use it. And I'm not going to go through all of these. I want to look at the first two. Leviticus 19:35 through 36. God says, "Do not use dishonest standards when measuring length, weight, or quantity. Use honest scales and honest weights, an honest ephah, which would be a measurement for dry substances, an honest hin, which would be a measurement for liquid type substances." God covers everything. "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt." I brought you out of Egypt. I don't want you doing the things the Egyptians were doing with dishonest scales and trying to cheat people out of stuff. So you're going to use your technologies or your measuring devices, but they better be honest and they better be used for good things. We get a little bit more of that. He's a lot more specific in Deuteronomy 25th chapter 13 through 16. He says, "Do not have two differing weights in your bag, one heavy and one light. Do not have two differing measures in your house, one large, one small. You must have accurate and honest weights and measures so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. For the Lord your God detests anyone who does these things, anyone who deals dishonestly." So if you understand what that means, it doesn't mean you can't have more than one measuring weight in your bag. It means you can't have two weights that are stamped with the same weight measurement. Does that make sense? I can have a 1 kilogram mass, a 2 kilogram mass, a 3 kilogram mass in my bag. That's fine. But I can't on the 2 kilogram mass, or on the 1 kilogram mass, I can't have it stamped as a 2 kilogram. And a 3 kilogram mass that's also stamped as a 2 kilogram mass, right? I can't do that. That's what it says. Don't have a differing weight. Don't have a light one and a heavy one, for what you're saying is the same thing. Why would I do this? One to sell and one to buy, right? If I'm going to be buying, I'm going to put that heavier one on there. It says 1 kilogram, but I know it's actually 2 kilograms. So I'm going to give them some money, and I'm actually getting 2 kilograms of stuff rather than 1 kilogram. I've stolen. That's called stealing. Or if I'm going to be selling, right? I'm going to put a lightweight on there, right? So that I'm not actually giving away my stuff as much as they think I am. And I'm going to be stealing their money in that situation. And God says this is detestable. We don't use technology. We don't use measuring devices to cheat our brother. This is dishonest. And this is not the way God, or I don't think this is the way you want God to measure you. Is it? Right? In Mark 4 and 24, what does Jesus say? Be careful with what you use to measure. We'll measure you the same way. Now, when I go and I'm measured before God, I don't want Him to have some fluctuating standard, right? I want one weight that I'm going to be measured against. I want to know what the evaluation plan is. What is the plan of salvation for me? I want to know what that is. I don't want an unwavering weight that God is going to be measuring me with. I don't want to be tekel, right? I think you learned what that was last week, right? I don't want to be tekel. I don't want to be found wanting because I didn't know what the standard was. So God detests this kind of a standard, of a measuring device that we can compare our lives and technology to. This has always been, measurement's always been a problem. It's always been a problem. God knows what He's talking about. It's been a problem forever. And so even up till this present day, and so what do we have? We have, to deal with the problem, we have the International Bureau of Weights and Measures. We have a problem in this world with people being honest with standard measurements, and so we're going to have standard measurements, and we're going to keep them in France. I don't know why we're going to keep them there, but not that they're dishonest or anything, but we're going to keep them there in Sèvres, France. We have this International Bureau of Weights and Measures, and there's actual things there that are under glass that are going to be, there it is, right there. That is a meter. That's it. And all companies that are going to make meter sticks, you have to go off that particular standard. And I could have chosen kilogram, I could have chosen any kind of thing, but I like to choose the meter because if we go to Mark 4 and it talks about measure, and we look at the Greek for that, it's metron, which is where we get the word metrics, or we get the word meter. So when we're talking about using a meter stick with my kids, I say, you're using a measurement. Here is a measurement. That's what the word meter means. It means the measurement. So I wanted to talk about meter in specific, on the history of the meter, on how we're always trying to make things more precise and have a better standard. And the problem is we're human, so we have a real hard time getting to a perfect standard. But we constantly, I mean, it's amazing how much money has gone into constantly trying to get a more better standard. So originally a meter was defined, I mean, how far is it? You know, I could do, okay, pitch pipe. From now on, we're going to measure everything in pitch pipes. And this is how long it is. I could pick any distance, right, for a measurement. You know, someone somewhere along the time, long ago had to pick some kind of a measurement, and they weren't given by God. God didn't give us, here's the length that you're supposed to use, although some of you might think a cubit is God-given measure. It's not. These are human-type measurements. God uses our human measurements, but they're still human-type measurements. So we just had to pick a certain distance. And how did we pick what a meter was going to be? Well, we said it's going to be 1/10,000,000th of the way from the equator up to the North Pole. And we sent out expeditions, and we walked this out, and we measured this out, and we're pretty close. It's about 40 million meters all the way around the entire Earth. So if you go from the equator to the North Pole, it's 1/4 of the way around, 10 million meters. A meter will be 1/10,000,000th of the way from the equator to the North Pole. Well, there's problems with that, right? I mean, it's not a real precise thing. It's not the best thing. So we changed it. We have new developments. So then we said, okay, a meter is going to be the length of what we call a seconds pendulum. Everybody know what a pendulum is? A pendulum is, you know, I could have a string. I could put something here, a bob, and I could just take it back, and I could swing it. It's going to go over here, and it's going to swing back, right? And a lot of you might think that it matters on how far I come back here, but that doesn't really actually matter. In fact, it doesn't even matter what the mass is on here. The only thing that matters on how long it's going to take for this to swing back and forth is what? How long it is. How long it is. So if we have a seconds pendulum is a pendulum that takes 1 second to swing over here and 1 second to swing back. 2 seconds. We call it a seconds pendulum. And how long is a seconds pendulum on the Earth? It's 1 meter. In certain places on the Earth, right? Because it depends on gravity. So if we're at sea level, yeah, it's probably about a meter. If we're up higher or down lower, it might be a little bit different thing. If we're on a different planet, then we throw it all out the window. We can't have that standard work there. It's not a universal standard in the truest sense. So this is a problem too. So then we get rid of that and we get really, really specific on things that people probably don't even want to hear me talking about, but we can measure the wavelengths of light, and so we have certain gases we can put electricity through, and they produce light. You call them all neon lights, although they're not all neon. There's argon and krypton, and they produce different colors. And we can measure how long. I can do this in my classroom. It's something that's really doable. I can do it in a high school classroom. We can measure wavelengths of light, even though they're really, really small. And so we have a new standard that came out, 1,650,763.73 wavelengths of the orange-red light that comes out of krypton gas. Whether you care about that or not, but that makes it a lot more precise. That's pretty big. It is pretty big. It made it very much more precise on our standard. And then later on, Einstein came around and talked about the speed of light. You know, it's uniform and nothing goes faster than the speed of light. And so we actually then just tied the length of the meter to the speed of light. Speed of light is like 300 million meters per second. So what's the definition of a meter? It's how far light travels in 1/300,000,000th of a second. You know, it doesn't take very long for light to go that far. 1/300,000,000th of a second. So it's tied to the speed of light. So the speed of light changes, you know, the meter will just change along with it. That was kind of the idea. But in 1889, they made an international prototype meter, which they keep in the International Bureau of Weights and Measures. It's a alloy, because we don't want it to expand at different temperatures, right? There's so many things. It's really hard to have a perfect standard. It comes at great cost to have a perfect standard. We have a 90% platinum, 10% iridium alloy, and there's two lines on it. This is actually a picture of it. There's a... It's an X-shaped kind of bar, and there's two lines on those bars. That one line to the next line is a meter at 0 degrees Celsius. We keep it at 0 degrees Celsius in France. I don't know whose job it is. Just watch that the whole time, but I'm sure there's someone who's wasting money on that. So this is our standard for that we keep here for for the meter. This is going to get kind of scientific, so not like it hasn't already, but we have a human precision problem. We can't get a perfect standard. We keep trying, but we always have a precision problem. And this is something I show with the kids, and usually I take about a month with the kids on this. I'm going to do this in like 10 minutes with you, so hopefully you're okay with it. So let's take some measuring device. I'm going to give you a measuring device. I won't tell you what it is, but it has markings on it. And I say, go measure out to something. So here's a measuring device. Not a lot of markings on there. If I wanted to get it on here, so if we could go clear on out, there'd be a 20 and a 30 and a 40 or something like that. Okay? So there's a red line on there. We're going to measure that red line. All right? So, and we'll just call these units, whatever they are, units. How many units long is it from the zero to the red line? 8, right? And we're kind of guessing, right? And that's okay, because any measurement we ever make in science, there's a guesstimate in there. There's always a precision error either way. So I heard 8, which I might have said 7, but who knows? It's close, somewhere right in there. And what that means is that it's not 8. What it means is, and my students will know, if I had some of my students here, they'd tell you, I'd say, hey, what does the measurement 8 units mean? They would tell you that it means it's somewhere between 7 and 9. That's what we're sure of. So it's not a very good measurement because it's technically an estimate. And any measurement we ever mention has an estimate in it. Every single one. We don't do numbers in science. We do measurements. And there's a really big difference. I get in arguments with the math people all the time about this. We have a precision problem here. Well, the next year, let's say I got a bigger budget, and I got better measuring devices. Because if you want more precision, you pay money. That's what happens. Precision costs money. So the next year I have a little bit better ruler. We're going to measure the same red line. Has the distance changed to the red line? No. Is our answer or measurement going to change? It'll be a little different, won't it? How long is it now? 7.2. Okay, we'll go with that. We know the 7's right, right? Do we know the 2's right? We don't quite know the 2's right. So when I say 7.2, I don't mean 7.2. What do I mean? I mean it's somewhere probably between 7.1 and 7.3, right? Okay, some of you, I know probably aren't getting this at all, but there's a lot of you that seem to be really responding to me better than my students, so I'm going to keep going. Okay, so we have a different measurement. And you know what? On my test, if I gave them this and they wrote down 7, it's wrong. It is fundamentally wrong on my test. Because it's not, because you have to state the measurement with the same precision of whatever the measuring device is. That's what you have to do. Otherwise, problems can happen in technology. Satellites can fall out of the sky. I mean, it is that serious. We can lose billions of dollars because people didn't do that. So then I get a lot more money the next year. I get my huge raise that I get every year. And I buy these really nice rulers here. And now what is the measurement? What's the right answer on the test for this one? It'd be hard to see probably, but 7.2. We were right about the 2. 7.2. It looks a little over half maybe. So 7.2 is 6, right? And the kids hate this. I'm like, just guess. Because when you get down this small, I mean, you're limited by your human. I mean, how can you see? It's definitely over half. So I'm saying 7.26. Does that mean 7.26? No, I mean somewhere between 7.25 and 7.27. Well, you guys are all going to get A's. You guys are doing such a good job. Okay? So we have a human precision problem here. And if I want to have more and more, how far can I go with this? Well, I technically can go down to about an angstrom, about the size of an atom. But then there's things smaller than that that God created, and I'm having a hard time going below that. So I can maybe measure down with precision things really, really precise. I can take a laser. We do this at the end of the year every year. I take a laser. I can shine it on a human hair, which I have to get donated from one of my students. And I can actually measure how thick that human hair is. With a laser, with light. Just a measuring device is all it is. Very, very precise. But we can't be perfect, can we? We can. What's the limit? You know, people talk about what's the limit of God, and they always think up. You go the other way, I'm telling you, it is so much more amazing the other way. God is in the small. It's quite amazing. And we always have this precision problem. I have two scales in my classroom. And if you looked at them, they'd be identical. You couldn't tell the difference. And if I said, go ahead and find the difference, eventually you'd put something on there and you'd realize one would measure, if I put the pitch pipe on there, it'd say like 35 grams. The other one would say 35.1 grams. So the only difference in those two scales, there's two differences technically, the first difference you would notice is that one goes to the tenths place and one just goes to the ones place. The other difference is the tenths place scale cost me $150 more. That's the only difference. Precision of a perfect standard, how much would that cost? What would be the price that would have to be paid for a perfect standard? It's hard to imagine, isn't it, what it would possibly be. There are some, and I wrote biblical measurements up here, and I was looking at it this morning, I thought that's kind of funny, because people look at biblical measurements and think that these are the scriptural measurements. And that they're not biblical measurements because they're given by God, they're biblical measurements because they're measurements that are mentioned in the Bible. They're still human measurements. And I thought it'd be fun to go through these quickly. In Exodus 37 and 12, we have a hand breadth. Everybody can practice here, because all these are literally, really human measurements, because they're all based off of our bodies. So we have the hand breadth. You can put your hand up and look across there. About 3 to 4 inches is a hand breadth. And God, in all these examples, I want to show you that although they're human measurements, these are all commandments of God. God is using our measurements, our world, the things that He's created in our world that we've developed and come in love, and He's using them for us for His glory. So in this first one, we have the ark border. It says, He made there unto a border of an handbreadth round about, and made a crown of gold for the border thereof round about. It's a handbreadth, about 3 to 4 inches wide this border was around the ark. In Exodus 28 and 16, we have the span. Everybody do this. From the thumb to the pinky. It's supposed to usually be about 9 inches, but what's the problem with these? You know? We got some little kids in there. I don't think that's probably 9 inches, right? I mean, it varies. It's a human type of measurement, but that's 8 or 9 inches is a span. Some of you carpenters, I've worked with, you know, you're out there measuring. You know, I'm like, use a meter stick. Come on, you're doing these things. So we have in Exodus 28:16 the ephod, the pouch on the breastplate. 4 squares shall be being doubled. A span shall be the length thereof, and a span shall be the breadth thereof. That's what that ephod looked like. And then we have the most famous one, 1 Kings 7:23. We have the cubit. This one's pretty good, really, for most adult males, I think. You know, try it. You know, go home. You're probably curious now. From this pinky down here to this this elbow, it's about a foot and a half, 18 inches, and it's remarkably close, really, for a lot of us, I think. And it says, and this was making the molten sea. And he made a molten sea. Woo! Technology. He made a molten sea 10 cubits from one. I'm gonna put that up to that. From one brim to the other. 10 cubits. From one brim to the other, it was round all about, and his height was 5 cubits, and a line of 30 cubits did compass it round about. So this was 5 cubits, and this was all the way around, was 30 cubits. That's the molten sea. This is a human measurement. God used it to describe how to make this thing. And, you know, you wouldn't find maybe a whole lot controversial about that verse, but I've given up on finding out what's controversial to some people that want to disprove the Bible. And I've had arguments with people on this verse. You know, you can think of a million other verses that people would argue with, but I've had arguments, people proving that God is not perfect or real because of this verse. Some of you know the math on this, right? When we have a circle, circles have always been amazing to people. And when we're trying to measure this, a lot of times we measure from the inside out, And what do we call that? The radius, right? Now, what is a radius? It's a measurement, right? It's a measurement. And what is that? It's a meter, right? Now, this isn't necessarily 1 meter, but a radius is a measurement. If we measure from here to there and then all the way back out again, we're measuring 2 measurements, right? How many meters? 2. What's this called? A dia measurement, right? 2 measurements, a diameter, a diameter. And so then we have around the outside, we call that a parameter, right? Around, a measurement around, or sometimes we call it, if you want to get real smart, a circumference. Oh, genius isn't here. And the thing that people always want to figure out is, like, you know, if I take this diameter, this diameter, this 2 measurement thing, and I make it like a bendy, like a string, and I put the string across there, and I say, okay, 10 cubits. I wonder how many of those diameters I can put around the outside edge. Someone originally thought, that would be a cool thing to figure out. Let's just see what it is. And so I start draping the string around here. And how many strings, how many diameters can I usually get around a circle? 3. Right? You guys have to show off. Right? I can get about 3 around, or a little over 3 around it. It doesn't matter what size the circle is. Right? That's the thing about it. If I have a little one, I got a smaller diameter, and I can still get about 3 of those around the circle. So my friends in college arguing with me on this is that, doesn't God know that pi is 3.14? I mean, look at this. It says 10 cubits across and 30 cubits around. Is pi 3? Well, I just went through with you an exercise, didn't I? What does that mean? It's 3. If I have a better measuring device that they're going to be using, it could be 3.1. Would you argue that that's wrong? 3.14. Why not 3.1415? Who wants to keep going to 1,000,000 digits? People always like to do this on Pi Day. Right? So this is... Yeah, I just wanted to throw this out on how ridiculous some people can be. There's no problem with this. And I don't want us to go overboard, too. Now, if you go... You should go Google the God's pie problem on the internet, and you'll find people that are abrasive about that and have already figured out how God's pie in this particular passage is absolutely perfect. Because there's also a passage that goes along with this that talks about that this thickness is like a handbreadth. Right? So are we talking about the outside perimeter and the inner diameter, or are we talking about the out? And so we've figured out whichever one works to make it to be 3.14, whatever, and we've looked like a foolish Christian, even battling that and trying to make an argument for that. This is just man's measurement, and God is probably saying, yeah, pi is 3. According to your measurements, you'll never know how far pi goes out. Another one we have is called the measuring rod. The measuring reed, Ezekiel 40:3-5, is measuring the temple wall. It says, he took me there and I saw a man whose appearance was like bronze. He was standing in the gateway with a linen cord and a measuring rod in his hand. The man said to me, son of man, look carefully and listen closely and pay attention to everything I am going to show you. For that is why you have been brought here. Tell the people of Israel everything you see. I saw a wall completely surrounding the temple area. The length of the measuring rod in the man's hand was 6 long cubits, each of which was a cubit and a handbreadth. See, they're long cubits, a cubit and a handbreadth. He measured the wall. It was 1 measuring rod thick and 1 rod high. If you want to do the math on that, 11 feet is basically what the measuring rod is. Measuring rods also used in Revelation 21:15-17, and this is where it's really an interesting case. It says, the angel who talked with me and had a measuring rod of gold to measure the city, its gates and walls. The city was laid out like a square as long as it was wide. He measured the city with the rod and found it to be 12,000 stadia in length and as wide and high as it is long. So what is it? It's a cube, right? The angel measured the wall using human measurement. Did you hear that? The angel measured the wall using human measurement. I always think it's funny in Revelation we're talking about, oh, there's going to be gold streets and there's the pearl and... Wait a minute, the elements melted with fervent heat. What's John doing? John's describing Revelation in human measurement. It's the only way we can understand it, comprehend it. We can't even fathom what it's going to be like. And I think it's really clear. He says here, I'm using human measurement when I'm describing these things. That's what he's saying. I'm using human measurement to describe these things. And it's symbolic, of course, the cube, because what do we have? What's the cube in the Old Testament? I don't know if maybe Wade talked about this or not. The Holy of Holies in the temple was a cube, right? It was length and width and height, they were all the same as a cube. In both times, in the New Jerusalem, the New Heavenly City, or the Old Testament, it's where God resides. It represents the Holy of Holies, and we have access to God in that case. Strong's for this rod or the reed in the Hebrew, 7070, is kane, if I'm saying that correctly. And it's very interesting that we have this word, because this word eventually, as it comes into the Greek and into the Latin, into the English, it ends up becoming the word canon. And we know what we mean when we talk about the canon, don't we? We're talking about the Scriptures. So the measuring rod is the Scriptures. This is the measuring device by which things are measured. In 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17, it says, all Scripture, the measuring rod, is God-breathed and is useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, training. These are measurings, right? It's good for measurement, training in righteousness, so that the servant of God may be thoroughly equipped. We want to equip you for every good work. You know what verse in the Old Testament I think is a parallel passage to this? Proverbs 13:24. He that spareth the rod hateth his son. I think that's a really good parallel passage. If you read that again, the Scripture, the Word, the rod, is good for you. It's good in a painful way. It's good for chastising, to rebuking you, and to admonishing you and teaching you. And therefore, it is the measuring device that we need to use. It's the measure, it's the perfect standard. I don't want to miss this point. There is what we call an open canon and a closed canon. Which one do we believe in? Anybody know? We believe in a closed canon. I hope we do. If we don't, I'm going to have to go fellowship in some other church. Because I believe I'm here because you believe that we have a closed canon. A canon that has been laid out, perfect, and needs no changing. No additions to it whatsoever. It's a closed canon. There are open canons out there. There's councils that meet that decide how the canon is going to be changed. There are doctrines and covenants that are going to be added in to show how this canon is going to be changed. Open covenants, an unchanging standard. What a terrible thing. How are you going to be measured? Oh, it could be different every single day. We have a closed canon. And usually our proof text on that is Revelation, but and so I don't like to use the obvious ones. There's another one in Deuteronomy 4:1-2. It talks about the Old Testament. It says don't add or take away from that. It's in the Old Testament too. It's a closed canon. God says, I have laid out the perfect measurement standard. And that is what you're going to do to use to evaluate everything in your life, including your technologies. We need to beware of flawed measuring devices. There's several measuring devices up here that I would like to compare myself to. Very good standards here. But as much as I admire these men down here, they're flawed. I hate to say that. But they are, and I'll admit it. They're flawed measuring devices. I can't compare myself to them. Although I can look up to them, I can receive advice from them, I can't compare myself to them because I don't want to be compared to a device that has flaws in itself also. We want to beware of flawed measuring devices. 2 Corinthians 10:12 says, we do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves. When they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are not wise. It's a great passage. Isaiah 28:16-17 talks about our standard. It talks about the cornerstone. I lay in Zion a stone, a tested stone, a precious cornerstone. I will make justice the measuring line and righteousness the plumb line. We've heard some things, and you've known the other passages we have in Daniel chapter 2. I'm sure you talked about the rock that was cut out by what? Not human hands, right? This is not human measurement. Exodus 20:25, don't put a tool on the altar. The true standards come from God. They don't come from us. They do not come from our technology. The time for me to end here. This last, the third Greek for technology was in Acts 17:29. I told you we'd hopefully get back to that. For as much then as we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the Godhead is likened to gold or silver or stone graven by, and then that art and man's device is where that word comes in. What this means is that technology is never going to replace God. I don't care what good it does for us, and it does really good things for us, right? I mean, I don't want to go back to not having my cell phone. It does some really good things for us, but it can never do the promises that God gives us. It'll never be able to do that. It'll never be able to offer eternal life for us. And that's what a very important thing is. We go through and talk about our technologies this week. I really want that foundation to be solid. We evaluate not only our technologies, but our lives according to an unchanging and perfect standard that was given to us by God. It's the most important measuring device that we can talk about. You, I think, can be dismissed.